Hey, who wants to live longer? Go to superhumanradio.com today and listen to Superhuman Radio live at 1 p.m. Pacific weekdays.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply. It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We have a great show planned for you today. During the first hour, I will be talking to Dr. Ash K. Sood about a linkage between adiponectin levels in women and the risk of asthma. This is going to be an interesting discussion because asthma is on the rise. I live in Louisville, Kentucky, and apparently we have become the asthma capital of the world. And so this is really interesting. What we will be discussing during the first hour. During the second hour, we will have Paul Jaminet on the show. He is the author of Perfect Health Diet and also the Perfect Health Diet blog. And we're going to talk about whether or not paleo-style diet, or as I like to coin it, ancestral diets, are mainstream ready. Can the mainstream adapt to this style of eating? Would they put the effort in? Is it a realistic hope for those of us who realize the benefits of ancestral diets? So that'll be later in the show. But first, we get started with my first guest, Dr. Ash K. Sood, who is with the University of New Mexico School of Medicine. How are you doing, Dr. Sood?
I'm doing well, Carl. Thank you for having me on your show.
Now, before we get started, what area of expertise and research? Are you on the pulmonary side, or are you on a side that is studying glucose metabolism and management?
I'm a pulmonologist, I'm an endocrinologist wannabe.
Ah, I love that. You know what? I God bless you, and I'll tell you why. Because the more physicians who have specialties, who recognize the importance of the hormonal messengers of the body and how they interact in their special field, the further we're going to make it into truly learning how to treat and cure diseases. So I applaud you for that, by the way.
I agree, Carl. All research is multidisciplinary.
Yes. That is very true. Okay, so first of all, I said something during the beginning of the show. I live in Louisville, Kentucky, and apparently we are the asthma capital of America right now. But asthma is on the rise throughout the nation, is it not?
That is very true, Carl.
So can you give me a brief snapshot of how dramatic the problem is today with asthma? Is there a percentage, 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000,000, 1 in 1,000 people suffer from this?
So about 7 to 8 Americans out of every 100 Americans have asthma. The rise in asthma has been primarily involving children, but it is also interestingly involving the older adults. The cause of the rise in asthma has remained unclear. There are probably multiple causes, but one of the things that has recently gathered a lot of attention is the fact that obesity is associated with increased risk for developing asthma, as well as having a more severe form of asthma. And this is particularly true for women.
Yeah, I noticed that there is a gender polymorphism in there somewhere. We're going to discuss that a little bit further, a little bit later in the show. But just out of curiosity, is asthma considered an inflammatory response of the body? Is that what blocks the bronchial pathways?
So asthma is an inflammatory disease of the airways. So you can imagine that anything that causes inflammation systemically may enhance inflammation locally as well within the airways. So the link between obesity, inflammation, and asthma has been something that has gathered a lot of attention recently.
You know what's really interesting, too? We did a show several months ago addressing the degradative effects of arthritis in obese individuals. And this research was really profound because it clearly elucidated misunderstanding that that arthritis in obese individuals is caused due to the mechanical loading of the joints, and showed that it is a type of inflammation that obesity produces that is what destroys the meniscus in the joints. And I have a suspicion that that same rogue inflammation that obese individuals encounter is linked to the response in asthma rates. Would you agree with that? That's a pretty broad statement. What do you think?
Well, you know, it's a very definitive statement. In science, there are very few things that are that definitive. But I think a lot of people are beginning to agree with you that that apart from its mechanical effects, obesity has inflammatory effects on the lung. And I like that term, rogue inflammatory effects, that may be responsible for asthma.
Well, because we understand that inflammation is a necessary response of the body in order to heal itself. But then there seems to be this antagonistic inflammation that predominates our society today. And it's not just a result, unfortunately, I cannot believe that it's exclusively a result of the inflammation due to the storage of body fat as much as or in concert with the types of foods that people who tend to become obese are attracted to have pro-inflammatory characteristics like high in omega-6 fatty acids and lectins and other things that are now starting to become apparent stimulators of inflammation. So I'm not saying that all obese people exclusively have this problem. I would say that anyone who's eating that type of diet that puts you on the fast track to obesity probably suffers from asthma as well. Do you find that there is clearly and exclusively an obesity linkage, or do you find that there are some people who maybe are not obese, but yet they still have this this asthmatic response?
So we do know that lots of asthmatics are not obese. So asthma does affect the non-obese individual. Of course, the greatest increase recently has been in the asthma phenotype that occurs in the obese population. Mm-hmm. Differentiating the effect of obesity alone vis-a-vis diet is very hard to do scientifically.
Yeah, unless you can really control the environment entirely. Having people self-report, they typically underreport the bad things they're doing and overreport the good things they're doing. And even memory recall about what they ate 2 weeks ago becomes very, very difficult as well. So I can understand that. But I guess that there's so much that depends on epidemiology in today's environment. And quite frankly, I've lost some of my trust in epidemiology only because sometimes if the endpoints are too hard and fast, we can really miss some of the important information. I have to believe that someone in your position also has some intelligent anecdotal information or even, some things that are starting to accumulate in your own mind and you're going, gee, I'm starting to see a pattern here. And I have to believe that the American diet, whether the person is already obese, or is, like I said, on that track to obesity, is playing some sort of role. Do you find any linkage, for instance, between individuals who have high grain intake and asthma? Is there any linkage at all that you've seen in research that you've read or anything like that?
I'm unaware of it, but I haven't focused on diet and asthma recently.
Okay. Here's what I want to do. I want to take our first commercial break. When we come back, I'd like to start delving into the subject of adiponectin. This is a very, very interesting protein peptide, quite sophisticated. And clearly it is either the canary in the mine as a marker or perhaps the actual, maybe not so corollary as causative. So we're going to start discussing that in a moment. We're talking with Dr. Ash K. Sood. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
It's Embridge, read like a who's who of hormones and natural compounds, designed to increase muscle mass, focus, and libido, so you can keep all your hard-earned muscle gains as you cycle off or diet down. Bridge is not fairy dust. Ingredients like Fatogea, Pregenolon, Phosphatidylserine, and Alpha-GPC ensure you maintain an anabolic environment while Uricoma, Longifolia, Murabuama, Lepidium Mayini, and Resveratrol keep you feeling strong and focused just the way you were on cycle. Bridge is the most unique supplement on the market that works anytime. Check out Bridge today at needtobuildmuscle.net. Don't lose your gains. Bridge.
You may not recognize Muscle Gauge Nutrition, but that's because they've been in the background as a private label manufacturer for some of your favorite brands. Now, get ready to hear their name a lot as an introductory offer. Get 5 pounds of pure whey protein isolate for as little as $11 a pound and get free shipping too. Each 30-gram scoop contains the requisite amount of leucine to stimulate the anabolic response. Check out these flavors: cake batter, chocolate, cinnamon bun, ice cream sandwich, rocky road, strawberry, vanilla, and unflavored. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad and use the coupon code SUPER. That's SUPER today.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
I have never endorsed a training guide before The Blueprint by Rob Regish. The Blueprint combines the best techniques for building muscle and gaining strength with the best tips on supplementation and nutrition. Everyone who has used The Blueprint has surpassed their expectations in muscular gains in record time. You'll learn how to break through any plateau, how to make gains from every single workout, and all for the price of a single supplement purchase. Get your copy of The Blueprint today by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Blueprint banner ad. Order today and get copies of both The Blueprint 2.0 and 3.0, plus ongoing support on the Blueprint forum to ensure your success.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
If you're like me, you avoid the insulin spike from eating pasta, but not anymore. Miracle Noodle is the world's first no-calorie, no-carbohydrate noodle. You heard me right. Now you can enjoy pasta dishes and stay on your low-carb diet. They have fettuccine, linguine, rigatoni, and more. Even angel hair pasta is now a no-calorie, no-carb food. And Miracle Noodle tastes great. So go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Miracle Noodle banner ad to learn more about how you can start enjoying pasta again, even when you're dieting. Find your miracle noodle at superhumanradio.com today.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
I don't know.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. I just want to remind everybody that Brooks Cubic has a distance learning seminar coming up in April and May. Patronize him. Go to his website, BrooksCubic, KUBIK.com. Join the webinar and be part of the solution. We're talking today with Dr. Ashke Sood about the linkage between adiponectin levels and asthma occurrences in women specifically. Dr. Sood, explain to my audience what adiponectin is.
Well, adiponectin is a protein that's produced by adipose tissue. There are two interesting things about adiponectin. While obesity is a pro-inflammatory state, adiponectin is really an anti-inflammatory molecule. And the other thing that's important is while most adipokines or proteins produced by fat increase as a person's weight increases, adiponectin concentration in the serum decreases with obesity.
Right. So it has an inverse relationship to body fat. The higher your adiponectin levels, chances are the leaner you are, and the lower, chances are the fatter you are, right?
That is correct.
Now, what is the symbiotic relationship between adiponectin and leptin, please?
So the leptin and adiponectin are like the yin and the yang of inflammation driven by adiposity. Leptin, on the other hand, is directly correlated with body mass index, and is a pro-inflammatory molecule.
Okay. Okay, so when looking at adiponectin levels in this particular group, describe the group. How large of a group of participants were in this?
Okay, so this is a cohort of middle-aged adults in the National Cardiac Cohort Study. It involves four different sites across the United States. The original study had included 5,115 people, but our study had included about 1,500 women and about another 1,200 men in the study.
Now, there seems to be a gender polymorphism here as it relates to adiponectin. Is that correct?
So, yes, that's true. There is a gender difference in adiponectin as well. Women tend to have higher total adiponectin than men do. In addition, women also have a higher proportion of the high molecular weight isoform of adiponectin
right.
than men do. It seems that testosterone, which is a hormone that men have, inhibits the production and secretion of adiponectin.
Now, adiponectin also has a relationship with glucose regulation, correct?
In fact, the adiponectin functions really hit, should I say, you know, the mainstream media, or it generated a lot of interest primarily because adiponectin had a strong association with insulin resistance.
So, in other words, it had an inverse. The higher the adiponectin, the greater the probability of insulin resistance, correct?
So the higher the adiponectin, the better was your insulin resistance. So it was the glucose levels were better as well, and the risk of developing diabetes was less.
Okay. Okay. And again, the thing that's hard to follow is the higher your adiponectin levels, the leaner you are, because it's an inverse relationship. Okay. So with that being said, what other things did you control for in this group to isolate the linkage between adiponectin and asthma?
Well, so firstly, we found that adiponectin predicted the chances of developing new onset of asthma later in life. This was seen in women. We did not see such an association in men. Of course, you know, our concern was maybe that adiponectin was asthma association was being confounded by simply body mass index or obesity. So when we adjusted for body mass index, this association remained robust, suggesting that this was not an obesity effect alone, but an actual effect of adiponectin itself. In addition to adjusting for BMI, we also adjusted for things like age, race, smoking, history of diabetes, insulin resistance, and physical activity.
And clearly, the linkage was when adiponectin levels were at their lowest, which typically occurred in the women with the greatest degree of adiposity, that is when the potential for asthma onset later in life occurred. Is that correct?
That is very well said.
Okay, so is it possible that it's simple to say that adiponectin is target specific anti-inflammatory effects on the bronchial airways, and that's where the magic is?
So you know, it's possible. That's what the mouse experiments suggest. At this point in time, what exactly happens in humans is simply hypothesized based on the mouse model. But what you're saying is supposed to be the best understood theory at this time.
Okay, so is it fair that to say that drug companies would endeavor a long-acting adiponectin? First of all, it should be understood that adiponectin is probably, if not the most abundant protein in serum, it's pretty close to it, right?
Well, it is present in fairly high concentrations, easy to measure.
Right. And is it the type of peptide protein that is stable in serum, or does it have a very, very short half-life once it presents itself?
It's actually a very stable molecule, which lends itself to epidemiological studies, as opposed to, you know, many other cytokines that have tremendous variation.
But it also lends itself to the pharmacokinetics model too, because that means that the potential simple. I mean, assuming that the research plays out and adiponectin is a target, is a target specific, anti-inflammatory effect on bronchial airways, then one could say that controlling adiponectin would reduce the occurrence of asthmatic episodes, right?
It's actually a occurrence of new onset of asthma.
Ah, so is there any relationship to existing asthmatic episodes and adiponectin levels?
Well, you know, there was another study that we had conducted earlier in which we had basically shown that low serum adiponectin was actually associated with a higher asthma severity in women, but the opposite was true in men. Low serum adiponectin was associated with better asthma severity in men. Men and women have completely different effects as it relates to adiponectin on asthma severity.
Okay, so with that, with that being the case, do you think that perhaps adiponectin is just corollary, that you haven't really found the causative relationship yet, that, and that's why you have these in this inverse situation in men versus women?
So there are big differences between men and women. There are differences in terms of how fat is stored between men and women. There are differences between adiponectin levels and its isoform distribution between men and women. And there are also differences in asthma between men and women. So I think we've continued to focus primarily on women because the disease is different, the obesity phenotype is different, and the kind and the amount of adiponectin is different than men.
Yeah, because of the high molecular weight. Do women have a higher degrees of asthma as the population goes?
It is true that women are more likely to develop new onset of asthma. It is also true that those women who already have asthma tend to have more severe forms of asthma than men do.
So, does asthma, the onset of asthma, have any correlation to puberty?
That's a very interesting question. So what really happens is before puberty, it's the boys who have higher prevalence of asthma and more severe asthma. But after puberty, boys, their asthma tends to become easier to control. On the other hand, post-pubertal girls and women then start increasing their the prevalence of asthma as well as increasing the asthma severity. So at about the onset of puberty, hormonal changes occur, and it is possible that estrogen and progesterone are detrimental for asthma, and particularly in the obese girl or woman.
Which leads me to the next question. Is there a change in asthmatic state after a woman goes through menopause?
So once a woman goes through menopause, her asthma risk starts declining. On the other hand, if the postmenopausal woman receives supplemental reproductive hormones, the rates of asthma increase again.
You see, and I am I'm not a learned scholar. I'm not a scientist. I just interview, but I see connections in things, and then I'm a firm believer in nature it produces perfect results, and I can't believe that nature produced these hormones to have these types of negative effects on the body. And so I keep coming back to the environment. What is it in the environment that promotes, other than obesity, because we understand the relationship between obesity and in the inflammatory response. Is there anything in your career as a pulmonologist that you are starting to see in our environment that seems to precipitate asthma in individuals?
Well, it's pollutants, outdoor air pollutants and indoor air pollutants, which are a very important cause for asthma in the adult population particularly. But in the young population, the hygiene hypothesis is a very interesting hypothesis.
Really?
Which Do you want me to tell you about
yes,
it?
Yes, please, please.
It's a bit of a digression from the obesity asthma hypothesis. But the hygiene hypothesis basically states that we subject our children to super sterile environments. And you know, when kids just roam around in the yard accumulating dirt, their body's immunological mechanism are tuned towards fighting microorganisms. But if you withdraw all microorganisms from a baby's environment, then you force their own immunological response to act towards its own cells, which may have something to do with the increased risk of asthma that has occurred in children lately. And that's the hygiene hypothesis.
Well, okay, so that would lead the question. Do you find asthma in greater occurrences in, say, urban and suburban areas versus rural areas where we have a high degree of maybe farming population, for instance?
So the farming population and people who have animals in their homes, they are somehow protected against asthma in their children.
To some degree, I'm familiar with someone who has, now this is totally different, but someone who had infant eczema and ended up with an asthmatic response to the pet, the family pet, as she got older. But these did occur after she began to go through puberty, which kind of throws yet that same twist back in about the introduction of certain sex steroids and their role in maybe an exacerbating response here.
So, Carl, we are talking about exposure occurring the first 2 years of life. So occurring the first 2 years of life, exposure to animals and exposure to a farming environment is protective. After the first 2 years of life, you know, that is no longer protective.
And I think that's great. You know, I think that we've really gone overboard in trying to sterilize our environment. And I've always been a huge proponent. I mean, I worked with animals throughout my younger years, and I've always been a big proponent of exposing yourself to those types of environments, because they do make you stronger, maybe through a form of hormesis. But nonetheless, it seems that it, just from what you're saying, that there seems to be some truth in that. Let's do this. Let's take a commercial break, and when we come back, I've got more questions. We're talking with Dr. Ashke Sood, and we're talking about the linkage between adiponectin and asthma in women. Later in the show, Paul Jaminet will be on talking to us about the suitability of ancestral diets as a mainstream way of life for America. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Check this out.
Melatonin is the best sleep aid in the world, but it has one flaw, the delivery method. Melatonin tablets are not efficient and can wear off too soon, leaving you wide awake in the middle of the night. Time-release tablets make you feel groggy in the morning. Now there's the Age4 Sustained Delivery Melatonin Patch. This transdermal patch delivers a precise amount of melatonin from the moment you apply it and continues to do so for an entire 6 hours. This ensures a full night's sleep while waking refreshed and ready to go. Visit ageforce.com and use the coupon code SHRMEL and save 50% off your first order. Go to ageforce.com and use SHRMEL today and sleep better tomorrow. No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, melanotan 2, mechanical growth factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like triptorelin or follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company.
The ingredients in Halo Extreme come right from the folklore of the Eastern Bloc athletes whose strength dominated the Olympic Games in the 60s. Halo Extreme contains oral turinabol, which increases strength, muscle hardness, and muscle mass while not converting to estrogen or DHT. Iron Mag Labs combines this with the powerful ecdysterone called 5 fat alpha hydroxylaxigenin that has shown to increase protein synthesis by up to 200%. Halo Extreme is a great choice for beginners to advanced users looking for low side effects and crisp, lean, easy to maintain gain. Go to IronMagLabs.com today to order Halo Extreme. I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest protein bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today.
That's the sound of 37 dumbbells. That's a lot of weight and a lot of wasted space when you can get the same thing done with just one set of power blocks. The new, quieter, urethane series power blocks with FlexPin technology are the heaviest and easiest to use quick change dumbbells on the market. Starting at just $149 a pair, power blocks can grow as your strength grows, all the way up to 130 pounds per dumbbell. Imagine a whole rack of dumbbells in the space of just one pair with power blocks. Go to powerblock.com today or call 800-651-1937. Power Block, the world's best dumbbells.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Iron Mag Labs wants me to notify you that they have Super DMZ back in stock for those of you who have been waiting. If your order has been on back order, it will be shipped. And if you've been putting off your order, waiting for it to be in stock, it's in stock. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Iron Mag Labs banner ad today. Talking with Dr. Ash K. Sood, we're talking about the relationship between adiponectin levels and asthma. Asthma is a big deal today. Lots of people suffer from it. Any effects seen in the type of asthma that is brought about by exerting yourself? You know, I think they call it sports-specific asthmatic response.
So you talk about exercise-induced bronchospasm.
Yes, yes.
And you're asking if exercise-induced asthma is different from the other kinds of asthma in
exactly.
terms of mechanism?
Yes, exactly.
And really not truly. I mean, they're really similar mechanisms. It's just that during exercise, the cold air that you inhale, the cold, dry air that you inhale as your respiratory rate rises, provokes inflammatory changes in the airway and triggers asthma.
And so is there any linkage, you think, to adiponectin levels as well?
Not really. None that has been studied so far.
Only because of adiponectin's anti-inflammatory capacity. That's why I was just curious. So
specifically exercise-induced asthma has not been studied in relationship to adiponectin.
And clearly those who smoke are at greater risk of asthma, correct?
Yeah, that came as a surprising finding, that women who smoke not only at higher risk for asthma, they were at higher risk for adiponectin-related asthma or low adiponectin-related risk for incident asthma.
So do you think that it's in the intrinsic effects of cigarette smoking that impair adiponectin regulation?
You know, that I am not entirely certain. The mechanistic basis of why smokers are more likely to show the effect of adiponectin than non-smokers is not entirely certain.
So where does your research go now?
Well, you know, we're now trying to see if you can measure adiponectin in the airway. And if the airway adiponectin correlates with the serum adiponectin, and if asthmatics have lower airway adiponectin concentrations, We're also trying to see if the adiponectin asthma is the regular eosinophilic asthma, or is it regulated through inflammatory cells other than the eosinophils, which are traditionally associated with asthma.
Interesting.
We're also trying to figure out whether women in the different phases of their menstrual cycle have different levels of adiponectin and different amounts of inflammation.
Would any of this matter if we were not constantly assaulted with the types of pollutants that seem to stimulate the immune response, whether it's because we are not prepared to cope with these because of, living in a hyper-sterilized environment or whatever? Obviously, we wouldn't have this discussion if the excess in assault wasn't prevalent, correct?
Well, we certainly show that the adverse effects on asthma of low levels of adiponectin are modulated by smoking, and in effect, one could argue that smoking is just a form of air pollution that one inhales. So it is possible that a similar interaction could be seen with other environmental pollutants, but we didn't specifically study that in the study.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. It's your own personal air pollution that you inhale when you smoke a cigarette. So your next research study will focus on?
So, Carl, we're actually measuring adiponectin in the sputum of asthmatics.
Okay.
And we're presenting some data at the American Thoracic Society conference in May, which shows that even after you adjust for obesity and serum adiponectin, sputum adiponectin seems to be lower amongst asthmatics than in controls.
I would love to see some research on individuals who were candidates for this particular study and obese after a period of time after losing the weight, bringing their weight under control, reducing their inflammation, and seeing if the adiponectin levels correct and, more importantly, the asthma goes away. That would be interesting to me.
So we've shown, and so have others, that if people lose weight, their asthma improves.
Oh, really?
So, there are many ways to correct adiponectin derangements. One of them, of course, is correction of obesity itself. But then physical activity raises adiponectin levels. And now there are a bunch of medications that can raise adiponectin levels if you're unwilling to exercise and unwilling to lose weight.
Which ones raise adiponectin levels?
So adiponectin levels are raised by a class of drugs which are called it's called PPAR gamma agonists, also called TZD, thiazolidinediones. It is a class of drugs that is used for diabetics. Not only do those drugs increase adiponectin levels, ACE inhibitors, some statins also raise adiponectin levels.
Interesting. So I can see where the statin drug industry is going to go here very shortly. They're already looking at the anti-inflammatory effects. I can see their drugs being very popular to control obesity. So that's very, very interesting. Listen, Dr. Sood, I want to thank you for taking time to come on the show and talk about this. I think this is exciting research, and I hope that it brings you closer to finding ways to rid people of this terrible disorder, asthma, because it is terrible. I had an aunt that had it, and whenever she would have, and ironically, she was obese, and whenever she would have these episodes, I mean, it was literally, she felt like she was going to choke to death. She just couldn't get her air in her. So it is very frightening. It's almost like momentary COPD, isn't it?
I'm sorry, say it once again, please.
I said it's almost equivalent to momentary or acute COPD.
Well, asthma and COPD have a lot in common, and COPD exacerbations and asthma exacerbations have a lot in common.
So do you think that there's a relationship between adiponectin, obesity, and COPD?
Well, Carl, I have to really compliment you for your insight. The asthma-obesity epidemics have already intersected. What is now happening as we speak is the obesity-COPD epidemics are intersecting. And a lot of what we've learned about adiponectin and asthma may in fact be very relevant for adiponectin and COPD associations as well. And I would not be surprised in the next 5 years there would be a lot of information coming out of how fat and the proteins produced by fat affect COPD.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, again, I am not a researcher, but I see a rise in obesity. The CDC is warning that by the year 2030, 50% of this population will be obese. And I see a rise in COPD, which is very, very obvious. You read the research, you look at the ads on TV for COPD medications, and you know that there's a rise in COPD. And one just surmises and goes, well, it's obviously a result of obesity. We know that obesity is pro-inflammatory. As you point out, adiponectin is anti-inflammatory. It seems to me that if we can just focus on correcting the obesity epidemic in this country, a lot of these diseases would not be as prevalent.
Well, Carl, the other thing that's interesting is it's the leptin. The leptin molecule seems to have seems to really play a very important role in COPD. While adiponectin seems to play a more important role in asthma.
Interesting.
So a lot of literature that's going to come out will be on leptin and COPD.
Oh, I can't wait. Is your group working on that?
We are working on leptin and COPD.
Very, very exciting.
Also looking at adiponectin and COPD.
Well, I'll keep an eye out for this research. Do you have a feel for some of the leptin and COPD research when it may be revealed?
Well, it'll be another 2 years. But
2 years.
Basically suggesting that leptin is associated with excessive decline in lung function independent of obesity.
Oh, this is priceless. This is fantastic. This is exciting. Very, very exciting. Listen, Dr. Sood, I want to thank you for taking time to come on the show today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Okay. Stay tuned. When we come back, we have a surprise guest. And then later in the show, Paul Jaminet. Can we make ancestral diets mainstream? You know what? We could probably cure COPD if we did. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Have been studied more than creatine and beta-alanine, and no two amino acids have been shown to independently improve athletic performance better than creatine and beta-alanine. When you join these two ergogenic powerhouses together, you get unparalleled results. And when you bypass the stomach and deliver them right to the bloodstream, you get the best single legal performance-enhancing product bar none. Save 50% off your initial order by using the coupon code CB50. That's CB50. Go to ageforce.com today.
Sissies may want to stop listening now. Super DMZ is the most powerful legal compound available on the market today, bar none. Super DMZ will give you lean muscle and strength gains at comparable rates to the anabolic steroid Dianabol with none of the water retention or bloat. Super DMZ contains Superdrol dimethazine, not to be confused with other Superdrol knockoffs. Get Super DMZ while supplies last at ironmaglabs.com. Don't wait too long because Super DMZ is sure to be added to the government ban list. Go to ironmaglabs.com today. Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone. while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at primordialperformance.com. No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies, and no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan 2, Mechano Growth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Companies.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest protein bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Mr. Bombastic. Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Later in the show, Paul Jaminet, author of Perfect Health Diet and Perfect Health Diet Blog. But right now we have a secret guest. Don't say your name. Remember that show where guess my line or what's my line, where they used the blindfold Orson Bean and some other people, and they would, you'd have to say what you do for a living, and people would have to guess who you are. But unfortunately, your voice is so well known. Who are you, mystery guest?
Well, we should take questions from the audience and see if anyone can guess.
I think they already know it's you, Brooks. How you doing?
Doing well, Carl. How are you?
Good. Do you remember that show, What's My Line?
Yeah. They had a similar show in New York City that my mother-in-law and father-in-law were on shortly after they immigrated to the United States.
Really?
From Holland. Yeah. Yeah, and it's always been tragic that they didn't have, like, you know, an episode of that preserved. It would have been interesting.
Yeah.
They had some bodybuilders on that show. I think they had George Eiferman and Steve Reeves.
Really?
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
Yeah.
Orson Bean, Peggy somebody, and there was a blonde, a woman with big black hair who was like a columnist from Manhattan, and then Orson Bean, I think. Was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They also, if memory serves me correct, and maybe you can find this out, you know, maybe people can look on Google, but I think they had a professional wrestler on one show. I mean, they had some people that we would all be interested in. It was sort of like, oh, this would be kind of cool. And we would know.
Yeah.
And, of course, the thing with Steve Reeves, you know, Steve Reeves, Mr. American 1947, Mr. Universe, he then goes on to play Hercules in the movies. And in, I believe, 1957, the year I was born, he was the most popular motion picture actor in the world.
Really? I never knew
that.
Yeah.
Oh, it was huge. And you also had the Superman TV show.
Yes.
That everyone from our generation would run home from school and, you know, watch Faster Than a Speeding Bullet, all that.
Was George Reeves, right? What was it?
Yeah, George Reeves. And so everybody got them mixed up. And anytime you had a quiz show or, a trivia thing where the answer was Steve Reeves, everybody would guess George Reeves.
Right.
And then later on, you had Christopher Reeves do the first Superman movie.
I know. Isn't that crazy? That's right. I forgot all about that.
Yeah, you know, so everybody gets their Reeves wrong.
Yeah. Yeah,
but not Superhuman Radio listeners.
No, not us. But anyway, first of all, tell me, how are things going with the distance learning webinar?
Well, I sent an email out to my dinosaur list, and I posted something on the dinosaur training blog, and I'm soliciting feedback from people because I'm scratching my head, Carl. I'm not getting that much of a response.
I'm surprised.
Yeah.
I really am.
And I said to people very candidly, you know, if I had had a chance to participate in something like this with, you know, say Bradley J. Steiner, John McCollum, Harry Pashal, someone that you know, I was reading their stuff about training when I was younger. If I'd had a chance to participate in something like this, you know, I would have been on it in a flash.
Right.
And so I've been soliciting, you know, questions, and I'm getting feedback from people. You know, some people say it's just a bad time of day for me.
It's a Saturday, right?
It's a Saturday.
At what time?
I believe it's at 2 o'clock Eastern. And you know, I understand this is a round the world thing, and that translates to different times and different time zones. But you know, I picked Saturday not because I wanted to give up a Saturday, but because I thought it would be the way that would be easiest for most people.
Right.
And we pushed it down the road so it was not in the middle of March Madness, so the basketball fans, you know, are able to watch basketball. Kept the price low. The initial price was $50, which was $12.50
per class. Right.
And it's gone up to $100. Frankly, we may take the price down to $50. It's a steal at $100. It's a steal at $50.
Right.
I mean, even at $100, it's $25.
And the only
class.
Reason why you're taking it down is because you're just scratching your head about the,
yeah.
you're trying to ascertain, well, okay, what is it that people are not responding. Now you and I talked about something off the air.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, maybe people feel like, well, Brooks gives me all this stuff for free when I do Ask the Experts and in his blog and all that sort of stuff. And so why would I want to pay $12.50 a class or anything, $25 a class to learn what he's already given me? Is that the case? Are you going to be talking about the same stuff over again in this course?
No, and see, here's the thing. The Entheos Academy has a broad base of people, okay? And I can teach a course that is for beginners if we end up with a lot of beginners, people who are not familiar with dinosaur training.
Right.
But I can also teach a course that's advanced stuff, you know, it's more like a PhD program for the people who know the basics and want to go to the next level. But I don't know which course I'm going to teach until I see who's signed up and I start interacting with those people and we start having questions and discussions. And brings me to another point. Some people say, well, if everybody's asking questions and arguing back and forth, you know, what's the point? Well, think about a class. A class always has a teacher.
And there's a sense of decorum, too.
Yeah, I'm a teacher. This is not going to be a free-for-all with everybody piling up on everybody and arguing about stuff.
This isn't going to be Ask Mr. Cotter's class.
Oh, we're showing our age. Welcome back, Cotter. Yes. It's not going to be that. I mean, it's going to be a legitimate class. Just like you were taking a college-level course at, you know, say, the University of Louisville Physiology Department, if they said, you know, Brooks, come in, you're teaching a symposium. And I'd be like, fine. And you can bet that we would have decorum in that setting. And, of course, we're going to have decorum in the
And also, people can't just shout stuff either. There's moderators that are working and gathering questions and passing them to you. It's a very, very sophisticated, organized process. It's not like a 200 person group phone call here. This is really quite a sophisticated process that Entheos does, and they've been doing it for a long time, and they've got huge following.
They've got huge following. They've got great lecturers. And here's the thing, and this goes to the, well, I can get it for free on Superhuman Radio, or I can get it for free in Brooks's blog. Why should I do anything more? Well, okay. Entheos is interested in promoting dinosaur training to a broader audience. Okay? That's a good thing for all of us.
Right.
And one of the reasons it's a good thing for all of us is if we get... You know, Mike Mahler has already done an Entheos program, okay?
On kettlebell training, right?
No, it was on optimizing your hormones.
Okay, but through exercise.
Yeah.
And supplementation, and right.
Exercise, supplementation, diet, you know.
And just for the record, folks, he did those two interviews on my show.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I'm sure that he learned something from last year when he did it. Last year he did it, you know.
Yeah, you're always learning, and there are always things that you're going to pick up in a program like this that you're not going to pick up when you're passively listening or passively reading, and that's one reason that I'm attracted to this, because it's a way of getting the message out there. And It's interesting when we do Ask the Expert. You know, I get these questions, and sometimes I just groan inside, because I think to myself, Jesus, Pete, I have covered this before. I've written about it. I've talked about it on my blog. I've tried really, really hard to explain, here's how we do it, and yet people are just not getting it. And the other thing that I'm seeing is there is a tremendous information overload, where everybody is now an expert, everybody has an opinion, everybody's on Facebook, everybody's on the internet, you know, you have all this stuff, much of it from people who really are not qualified to express an opinion. And what happens is people are overwhelmed. You know, there's so much information, they don't know what to do, they don't know what to follow. I see that all the time. And what is really important for people is to have someone take you from step A to step Z in a logical, systematic fashion.
Right. From end to end.
From end to end. And tie it all together so that you are getting not just snippets of information and not just pieces and parts, but the whole thing. It's all tied together. That is the beauty of having a class. And this is essentially a four-week class or symposium that we are delivering through distance learning.
Right. And it's an exciting opportunity, because this is really the first event in a physical culture nature that this group is putting on. And we don't want them to think the physical culture arena is a bunch of duds. You know, when I was a young man in my 20s.
Absolutely, yeah.
I used to drink at a bar called Tootie's in New York. And Tootie's was famous because guys like Jackie Gleason bartended there on their way up to the big time. But unfortunately,
oh, wow.
Okay, I used to drink there as a young man in my early 20s, but there were no real famous people there. The place had its heyday already. But the guy who used to own the place, his name was Tootie.
Mm-hmm.
Us young guys would go in there and we'd buy a beer. Back then, a draft beer was 25 cents. Okay?
Wow.
And we'd buy a beer and we'd stand there and we would nurse that beer and we'd be there for hours, right? And
yeah.
We'd be looking at the girls and talking to the guys and, you know, all this stuff. And Tootie would come by and he'd look at us and he'd shake his head. My friend Al Fasano could tell you this story. We still laugh about it. And he'd slap himself in the forehead and he'd go, spend a buck, why don't you? Like, in other words, you're breathing my air. You're using my heat. It's wintertime outside. You're nursing that 25-cent beer. You're going to try to nurse it for the whole night. You know, spend a buck. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy used to put out free meatball Parmesan heroes in little,
mm-hmm.
little, and you could go over to the little buffet table and eat. And he gave all this stuff away for free, and we would, rightfully, he was right. Spend
mm-hmm.
the buck, he would say. I could still see Tootie saying that, slapping himself in the forehead and going, spend the buck, for crying out loud, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what we're saying here, too. You know, Brooks has contributed to all of you, everybody out there listening to this show. Brooks has contributed in one way, shape, or form. And here we are going to this group called Entheos and saying, no, the physical culture audience is a responsive audience. They want to learn. They want, and Entheos is going, okay, let's give it a shot. And we're not getting the response we want. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm asking out there to, you know, I'm not trying to paint anybody into a corner. If you can't afford it, you can't afford it, period. End of story. Been there, okay? But if it's something you can afford and you're not taking the time to invest in yourself for 4 weeks, 4 one-hour classes for $100, really? I mean, come on. Go to Brooks Kubik, KUBIK.com. Look in his blog for the link to the Entheos seminar and sign up. And in the words of Immortal Tutti, he's probably gone a long time now. And probably at the moment he took his last breath, he saw my face and thought to himself, why didn't that kid spend a little more money in my bar? Spend a buck. How's that one, Brooks?
Oh, my God. What an existential guilt trip going all the way back to Tutti's.
There you go.
You know, Carl, the one interesting thing, the Entheos people are well aware of Superhuman Radio and, you know, the close to a million downloads.
Right.
You know, and I mean that's huge. But this is
this is big too. People need to come out and support Brooks. That's it. End of story. People need to come out and support Brooks. Okay.
Well,
go to BrooksKubik.com, KUBIK, and sign up for the Entheos seminar. I'll be there. Okay, Brooks. Thanks a lot, man.
Sure thing. Take care, man. Bye.
All right. When we come back, we will have Paul Jaminet. I learned how to pronounce his name today on the Highbrow Paleo Forum. We'll be right back. Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in Can-See Eye Drops. I've been using Can-See for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find Can-See Eye Drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. Can-See Eye Drops. The name says it all.
You may not recognize Muscle Gauge Nutrition, but that's because they've been in the background as a private label manufacturer for some of your favorite brands. Now get ready to hear their name a lot as an introductory offer. Get 5 pounds of pure whey protein isolate for as little as $11 a pound and get free shipping too. Each 30-gram scoop contains the requisite amount of leucine to stimulate the anabolic response. Check out these flavors: cake batter, chocolate, cinnamon bun, ice cream sandwich, rocky road, strawberry, vanilla, and unflavored. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad and use the coupon code SUPER. That's SUPER today.
From the iconic metabolic expert, Dr. Scott Conley, comes Physique 2.0. Physique 2.0 is the only meal replacement with MetaFX, Beta-FAOCHO. That's a long way of saying the only carbohydrate supplement that has been clinically shown to burn fat. Just like the complete milk protein in Physique 2.0 promotes fat burn, so does the carbohydrate source. This is the first ever food source that can burn fat while building muscle. What are you waiting for? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Physique 2.0 banner ad to learn more.
I have never endorsed a training guide before The Blueprint by Rob Regish. The Blueprint combines the best techniques for building muscle and gaining strength with the best tips on supplementation and nutrition. Everyone who has used The Blueprint has surpassed their expectations in muscular gains in record time. You'll learn how to break through any plateau, how to make gains from every single workout, and all for the price of a single supplement purchase. Get your copy of The Blueprint today by going to superhumanradio.com. And clicking the Blueprint banner ad. Order today and get copies of both the Blueprint 2.0 and 3.0, plus ongoing support on the Blueprint forum to ensure your success. AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Welcome back. Whenever this song is playing, I always feel like I want to talk to the rhythm. Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Okay. You know, those of us who have adhered to ancestral diets for some time now, we know the health benefits. And people who latch on for the first time see the health benefits very, very quickly, which makes one scratch their head and go, why isn't paleo nutrition, why isn't these the ancestral diet catching on in a bigger way? And that's going to be partially the subject of discussion today with my next guest, author of The Perfect Health Diet. You can go to his website, perfecthealthdiet.com, to learn more about the book. Paul Jaminet. How you doing, Paul?
Oh, hi, Carl. I'm doing great.
You know, the evidence is there. We had Rob Wolf on yesterday, and he was talking about some exciting things that are going on in the city of Reno, Nevada, where the local government agencies have agreed to adopt the paleo diet for firemen, police officers, municipal workers, and so on and so forth, and they're going to follow the results. And we know what the results are going to be already. But why is it that you think the mainstream has not jumped on board with this, the way they jump on board with veganism, which really makes me scratch my head?
Yeah, well, I think they are jumping on board, actually. It's, you know, I think we're just about at kind of critical mass where everything takes off. It's, you know, I know from our website, the traffic has tripled over the last year. And I look at other paleo websites, most of them have doubled their traffic. If you look at the bestseller lists, the top-selling diet and nutrition books are paleo or close to paleo, like William Davis's Wheat Belly.
Right.
You know, so there's definitely a lot of
traction. There's traction out there. There's no doubt about it. You know, you have mainstream individuals like the Wizard of Oz, who pokes fun at Gary Taubes and then makes a mockery of what he called the caveman diet by locking people in a cage at a zoo and forcing them to eat things that clearly were not the staples of the paleo. Why do you think some individuals in the mainstream media like to really derail the message? You think that there's a conspiracy, or you think that's what brings viewers?
Yeah, I think it's what brings viewers. They're just entertainment. You know, I know a few people who have been on Dr. Oz, you know, have told me they have to reduce everything to sound bites. You know, you get four or five sound bites, and you know, that's really all you can count on. And you know, so what they're trying to do is entertain, and you know, very few of their audience members are paleo or have any experience with it. And you know, when you tell an ordinary person, you know, you should live like a caveman, you know, a lot of them will, that's funny. So, you know, I think the entertainers take their cue from what a lot of their audience is. But the more traction paleo gets and the more people have experienced benefits from it, you know, then there's going to be a lot more curiosity. When everybody's heard of a friend or a family member who's gotten benefits from paleo, they're going to want to hear, you know, they're going to be saying, tell me more about it. You know, tell me why this works. And, you know, so I think the attitude is going to change. And, you know, so I know on the paleo blogs when, you know, Gary Taubes goes on the Dr. Oz show, you know, then everybody says, oh, the advertisers are driving in the ass to, you know, defend the foods the advertisers have. And,
right.
And there probably is, you know, a lot to that. You know, but I think once paleo starts getting traction, then we'll see the food producers migrate toward, you know, paleo type foods. You know, things will start changing. The whole ecosystem will build up around paleo. and there'll be more of an incentive for the media to promote it.
You know, I had Gary on the show right after he did that interview, literally the same week that he did the interview on The Wizard of Oz. And he had said it right up front. He said that they kept telling him, now look, this is just entertainment. You know, that's all this is entertainment. And they just chopped everything he said up and took very, very important aspects of what he said out, which changed the delivery of his message. And he had to agree to that up front before getting on the show, before he could even get on the show. And so, part of my frustration with Dr. Oz has been the fact that he works so hard to dumb down the message, the information, that the real message gets lost. And the problem that I have with Dr. Oz is it's not entertainment, because there are people who take what he says and act on it. It's not like the Three Stooges, where, you know, hey, don't really try to poke yourselves in the eyes, because they're doing this and hitting their forehead. You know, it's like people go, oh, he's a doctor, he's telling me to do these things.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, I wouldn't blame Dr. Oz personally so much, because we have, you know, the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the food pyramid, you know, telling people to eat lousy diets. So,
yes, absolutely.
You know, it's he's not doing anything unconventional or odd. You know, so we really have the battle of moving paleo into the mainstream and, you know, persuading doctors, nutritionists, the general public, and ultimately, you know, government dietary authorities and media personalities, that eating the paleo way is really going to help people, is a much better template for eating than mass industrial agriculture and processed food.
Yeah. Let's do this. We have to take a commercial break. When we come back, I want to ask you what you perceive as some of the biggest obstacles in the proliferation of the Paleolithic diet. We're talking today with Paul Jaminet. He is the author of Perfect Health Diet. And you can get the book by going to his website, which is perfecthealthdiet.com. You can also read a very insightful blog there. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio. Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today. Are your goals longevity, endurance, vitality, or wellness? Well, you'll find everything you're looking for at uscellwellness.com. US Cell Wellness was founded on the belief that total well-being begins at the most basic cellular level. Their natural supplements are designed to work with the body to achieve health and vitality. Their formulas are backed by a team of nutritional researchers, healthcare professionals, and nutritional supplement biochemists. Whether you're concerned for your own wellness or a clinician caring for others, it all starts at uscellwellness.com. Save 20% off your first purchase when you use the coupon code SUPER. 6-Oxo is back thanks to Iron Mag Lab, the gold standard for testosterone boosting and estrogen reduction that all other over-the-counter aromatase inhibitors are compared to, is 6-Oxo progesterone. 6-Oxo is the active ingredient in the new E-Control RX from Iron Mag Labs. Iron Mag Labs has resurrected the beast that has been clinically shown to raise free testosterone by as much as 226%. As men age, estrogen rises and testosterone drops. E-Control RX can help reverse this from happening. E-Control RX is suitable for post-cycle therapy to jumpstart natural testosterone production. Get E-Control RX today. Go to ironmaglabs.com today. You already know how great the Testo 100 transdermal testosterone boosting patch is. Well, now it's even better. The new and improved Testo 100 patch now contains diaspartic acid, stinging nettle root, and androstenotrione to increase free testosterone while reducing sex hormone binding globulin
insulin, and aromatase enzyme. It's still made in FDA-certified labs and contains all the great ingredients that made it work originally. But now it's even better, bypassing the stomach to deliver its ingredients throughout the day for greater increases in energy, libido, and muscle-building, fat-burning effects. Get 50% off when you use the coupon code SHR4. Go to AGEFORCE.com and use the coupon code SHR4 and get your new Testo 100 patch today.
That's the sound of 37 dumbbells. That's a lot of weight and a lot of wasted space when you can get the same thing done with just one set of power blocks. The new, quieter, urethane series power blocks with FlexPin technology are the heaviest and easiest to use quick change dumbbells on the market. Starting at just $149 a pair, power blocks can grow as your strength grows, all the way up to 130 pounds per dumbbell. Imagine a whole rack of dumbbells in the space of just one pair with power blocks. Go to powerblock.com today or call 800-651-1937. Power Block, the world's best dumbbell.
The ingredients in Bridge read like a who's who of hormones and natural compounds designed to increase muscle mass, focus, and libido so you can keep all your hard-earned muscle gains as you cycle off or diet down. Bridge is not fairy dust. Ingredients like Fatogea, Pregenolon, Phosphatidylserine, and Alpha-GPC ensure you maintain an anabolic environment while Uricoma, Longifolia, Murapuama, Lepidium Mayeni, and Resveratrol keep you feeling strong and focused just the way you were on cycle. Bridge is the most unique supplement on the market that works anytime. Check out Bridge today at needtobuildmuscle.net. Don't lose your gains. Bridge.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. I got a couple emails a couple minutes ago. Yes, the right channel was dropping out on my microphone. I just swapped microphones. I must have a bad capsule in that microphone I've been using for years. I use only the best microphones, Paul. I buy the Electrovoice microphones, which is the same ones that people like Rush Limbaugh use. But his is gold-plated, and mine is that that metal pea green color. So anyway, what do you think the biggest obstacles are right now facing the proliferation of the message of the paleo diet?
Well, I think probably the biggest obstacles until now have been on our side. I think we needed to really refine the paleo diet and figure out what is really important. So a lot of the early versions of paleo were very restrictive, not only eliminating grains and legumes, but eliminating all starches. Many of them, Lauren Cardain was kind of recommended low in saturated fat. So there have been, the history of paleo has been very restrictive diets, and the more foods you restrict, the tougher it is for people to adopt it. And I think one thing that's happened is that we've gradually figured out that the key thing about paleo was getting rid of all the toxic foods.
Yes.
And you can actually eat a pretty wide variety of foods, including some starchy foods. So we coined the term safe starches to describe the ones that the starchy plant foods that were low in toxins, and
low in what?
Low in natural food toxins.
Oh, okay.
So things like rice and potatoes are actually very safe to eat, and it's good to be able to include something like rice because then people can make pasta, they can make crackers and cookies. A lot of the gluten-free recipes will work with rice flour and potato starch, and so people can get a lot of the foods that they're used to eating.
So what we're talking about here is foods that are low in anti-nutrients, whatever they may be. You know, the whole debate about lectins being good and bad, and some lectins being good and some lectins being bad. I think I like this discussion because Rob and I talked about this as well. Who cares what it is about that particular legume that makes it toxic to you? We're splitting hairs by trying to say, well, no, it's this, it's that. No, we know that that particular legume causes a pro-inflammatory response when you eat it. So just don't eat it. You don't have to figure out what it is about it. And I like that attitude. So when we look at foods that are candidates for the Paleolithic style of eating, we're really looking for foods that are not toxic to the system, you're saying, right? Period. End of story.
Yeah, that's right. So, and in fact, you know, we know when we study Paleolithic diets that they actually ate grains. So they weren't eating a totally toxin-free diet, but the quantities they were eating were so much smaller.
Yes.
So today most Americans eat, you know, get one-third of their calories from wheat. They get a substantial fraction from sugar and high fructose corn syrup and soybean oil. And, you know, right there you've got about two-thirds of the calories in the typical American's diet.
Right.
And, you know, and all of those have toxicity issues. So, we're really asking people to make a big change in their diets. But if you can have close substitutes like, you know, rice noodles, rice crackers, gluten-free bread, those kinds of things replacing the wheat, you can tell them what healthy oils are to replace the soybean oil, then it gets a lot easier. What are healthy sweeteners that can replace added sugar?
Okay, so what are healthy sweeteners in your opinion?
First of all, I don't recommend using a lot of added sweeteners, but I think it's okay to use glucose-based sweeteners, so things like rice syrup or dextrose powder. And really, you know, your tastes change when you start eating paleo, so you don't really need as much sugar. You know, I think a lot of people are addicted to sugar and they need that sugar kick.
Yeah, I mean, Pam Colleen in her book, Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic, talks about the effects of sugar on the brain that are very similar to that of certain drugs. And I'm with you on the whole not using too much sweeteners. And I've always suspected that the response to the response to sugar that is not good starts at the tongue, the moment it hits the tongue, because the body readies itself for it. And I think that was proved in the 60 Minutes piece that they did with Dr. Lustig the other night about the dopamine variants changing in the brain just at the touch of the sugar to the tongue. I don't think it's just the dopamine. I think it's the whole biology of your body changes in preparation for sugar. And so I'm with you on that. I think that, you know, sweeteners, by and large, should be treated like sugar in general and held back. Do you feel that fructose is a different type of a sugar, that it needs to be held out and treated differently than other sugars?
Yeah, and we know it's treated differently. It's, glucose is allowed to circulate freely in the blood, whereas fructose is directed to the liver and metabolize there. So the body does handle them differently. They are different. High levels of fructose consumption are associated with liver diseases, especially metabolic syndrome.
Right.
I think the levels of fructose that we get in, in whole foods like fruits, berries, beets, carrots, are fine. But I don't think we should be adding fructose-containing sugars to our foods. And arguably, you could make the same case for galactose, which is a milk sugar, which is also metabolized in the liver mostly.
And this is where Dr. Cordain and I diverge. He's been on the show several times and over the years. And whenever we get into the discussion of milk, I always, he always comes out with these blanket statements which are founded in science. And he recently returned. He did my show shortly after returning from some sort of a symposium abroad that showed the dangers of galactose and even linked it to the formation of cataracts in the eyes. And I look at milk differently. I look at milk the same way I look at beef. You know, raw unpasteurized milk from grass-fed cows that have not been given any type of pharmacological intervention to keep them alive in the periods of time, you know, relatively close to when that milk was produced, that live natural lives and are able to act like cows do. I don't know why that is, why dairy seems to be thrown under the bus here when there seems to be a preponderance of information on its beneficial effects when it is in its natural, pristine state, raw, unpasteurized from cows that have led a natural life. Do you find any differentiation between dairy and raw dairy from cows that have led natural lives?
Yeah, there's definitely a difference. You know, I think dairy is really, it's the most complicated food to analyze. You know, we know that human milk is the perfect food for very young children, and cow's milk is the perfect food for calves. And, you know, so it's an extremely nutritious food, but it's also extremely complex. It's like a complete diet in one liquid.
Right.
And so it's very difficult to analyze all of its effects. And, you know, there are some risks that, you know, people with age may lose some ability to handle milk. There's also issues about whether cow's milk is appropriate for humans.
Right.
But in general, dairy fat is the healthiest fat. So, you know, butter is a tremendously good food.
But again, you're differentiating. You're saying cows that have eaten grass and lived natural lives, that fat is the healthiest fat.
Yeah.
Or are you saying all butter, regardless of the animal husbandry interventions that have been used?
Well, butter is pretty good. You know, that gets into, you know, the actual fats in butter are good, but they can have fat-soluble compounds and things in them that may not be good for you. So definitely, I definitely recommend getting grass-fed, you know, naturally raised, getting milk from grass-fed, naturally raised cows. Now, you know, I can tell you what we do. We eat a lot of butter. We eat some cream. We do drink some milk. And we eat cheese. But I wouldn't recommend, you know, making milk a staple calorie source,
mm-hmm.
Of your diet. So we have a little, what we call our food plate, that describes our diet, and we list dairy among pleasure foods, like, fruits, berries, glucose-based sweeteners, chocolate, nuts, things
did
like
you say,
that.
Did you say nuts?
Yes, nuts.
So nuts, nuts are considered an optional, or what did you call it again? I'm sorry.
Well, I called them pleasure food.
Pleasure food. I'm sorry.
Which basically are things that we wouldn't recommend making meals out of, as a rule.
Right.
But they're great snacks. They're great desserts. They're good to have maybe up to 20% of your daily calorie intake.
Okay.
You know, but not your primary, food sources.
Do you think, before we go into the break, Paul, do you think that the fact that, Boyd Eaton and Dr. Cordain coined the term paleo diet and tied it to the caveman lifestyle, that in and of itself damned the diet to be some extreme / zealot like / aberration of nutrition, and that's why the mainstream hasn't looked at it more seriously? Or you think it's just because the preponderance of science and the benefits of eating this way have yet to be shown to the masses?
Yeah, no, I don't think that name was a problem. I think some of the claims that they've made, you know, like that we haven't evolved since the Paleolithic, are mistaken. So, you know, I think you have to be a little bit careful in how you, you know, frame the discussion. But there's no question that the way people ate in the Paleolithic is a very healthy way for people to eat now. And, you know, so I think, you know, the name Paleo is a terrific name. If we didn't, you know, we chose a different name for our diet, mainly because, you know, Paleo was already sort of taken as a brand.
Right.
You know, but we're definitely a Paleo style diet. You know, we think our diet is the way, you know, it's probably more accurately describes how, most people ate in the Paleolithic than say Lauren Cordain's.
Right.
You know, I think actually the evolutionary ancestral template for eating is a very persuasive one.
Well, I want to talk more about that. I want to talk about ancestral diets. I want to get your an opinion of how long it takes for our genetics to be exposed to certain things before we either adapt or not. We're talking with Paul Jaminet. He's the author of the Perfect Health Diet book. You can go to perfecthealthdiet.com to learn more. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
From the iconic metabolic expert, Dr. Scott Conley, comes Physique 2.0. Physique 2.0 is the only meal replacement with MetaFX, beta-FAOCHO. That's a long way of saying the only carbohydrate supplement that has been clinically shown to burn fat. Just like the complete milk protein in Physique 2.0 promotes fat burn, so does the carbohydrate source. This is the first ever food source that can burn fat while building muscle. What are you waiting for? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Physique 2.0 banner ad to learn more.
The ingredients in Halo Extreme come right from the folklore of the Eastern Bloc athletes whose strength dominated the Olympic Games in the 60s. Halo Extreme contains oral turinabol, which increases strength, muscle hardness, and muscle mass while not converting to estrogen or DHT. Iron Mag Labs combines this with a powerful ectosterone called 5-alpha-hydroxylaxigenin that has shown to increase protein synthesis by up to 200%. Halo Extreme is a great choice for beginners to advanced users looking for low side effects and crisp, lean, easy-to-maintain gain. Go to ironmaglabs.com today to order Halo Extreme.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else? Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Melatonin is the best sleep aid in the world, but it has one flaw. The delivery method. Melatonin tablets are not efficient and can wear off too soon, leaving you wide awake in the middle of the night. Time-release tablets make you feel groggy in the morning. Now there's the Age 4 Sustained Delivery Melatonin Patch. This transdermal patch delivers a precise amount of melatonin from the moment you apply it and continues to do so for an entire 6 hours. This ensures a full night's sleep while waking refreshed and ready to go. Visit ageforce.com and use the coupon code SHRMEL and save 50% off your first order. Go to AGEFORCE.com and use SHRMEL today and sleep better tomorrow.
Sissies may want to stop listening now. Super DMZ is the most powerful legal compound available on the market today, bar none. Super DMZ will give you lean muscle and strength gains at comparable rates to the anabolic steroid Dianabol with none of the water retention or bloat. Super DMZ contains Superdrol dimethazine, not to be confused with other Superdrol knockoffs. Get Super DMZ while supplies last at ironmaglabs.com. Don't wait too long because
Super DMZ is sure to be added to the government ban list. Go to IronMagLabs.com today.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Just want to plug my good friend, Adel Moussa. You know him as Professor Dr. Andro. His current blog post, Strength, Cardio, or Both? Study sheds light on which of the three generates the highest testosterone to cortisol ratios, plus why it may not even matter. Go to Subversity, SUPPVERSITY.com to read his blog. We're talking with Paul Jaminet. He is the author of The Perfect Health Diet, and you can learn more about him at PerfectHealthDiet.com. And right now we're so Paul, you know, I'm a big proponent of the ancestral diet, and that's what I call it for me, okay? Because my ancestors are different, and maybe I have certain polymorphisms that allow me to thrive on things like dairy, for instance, and so on. Other people don't, and I'm not going to impose my style of eating on other people unless it's right for them. But there's a lot of discussion about genetic changes. You know, every day they talk about epigenetics. I mean, that's a new one in the mix now, and so on. The genetic changes that we've experienced over thousands of years of being exposed to certain things. And one must assume that, as you pointed out before, that, you know, they ate grain thousands of years ago, but not as much. How long does it take for something to be introduced into the diet that doesn't kill us? And we perhaps don't thrive on it either. But for it not to have the damaging effect, or is that not the way it works?
Well, I think the way it works, we have to separate the nutritional aspect from the toxicity aspect. So if a food is not nourishing, our evolution is not going to make it nourishing for us. So, you know, the nutrients our body needs aren't going to change. And, you know, so a food that is empty calories is still going to be empty calories no matter how much we evolve. What we can evolve is a better toxin handling system. So if we're constantly exposed to a toxin, then there'll be evolutionary pressure to develop a way of handling that. And that seems to be the big thrust of our evolution in regards to diet since the Neolithic began. We've become much more tolerant of things like wheat and so on. So if you look at, we've gotten some experience with introducing Western diets to Aboriginal peoples, especially in the South Pacific. And so we can see how quickly they develop the diseases of civilization after they adopt.
Boy,
that was
a cruel joke.
Yeah, oh. That's right. So, you know, if you eat the American type diet, and by the time people are age 50, after 50 years, you know, something like 5 to 7% of the public will have developed diabetes. But if you take these Aboriginal peoples and put them on a Western diet, you'll get to 5% having diabetes within a couple of years.
So there you go.
It's, you know, something like 20 times faster. So, you know, they don't have that, you know, that 6 or 7,000 years of exposure to wheat, that our ancestors, you know, that the ancestors of Europeans or East Asians have. And, you know, so they're much less tolerant of it. You know, so I think that's the main change, is that, you know, a Paleolithic diet is still the optimal diet for us today. But we have evolved some ability to tolerate a broader range of diets. So we can deviate from it, and our health will still be impaired, but it won't be impaired as much as it would have if we still had all of our Paleolithic genes.
Well, what about this? There's a lot of undercurrent that resists the paleo diet, pointing to the lack of sustainability for the masses. We can't, you know, you'll hear people say, we can't expect everyone to eat this way. They don't have the economic wherewithal. They don't have the geographic wherewithal to obtain the right kind of foods. And, you know, so it's just not realistic to thrust this upon the American people. I've actually heard politicians make this type of an argument. And then you look at the types of things that our government today is investing in, taking a real crapshoot with the potential effects on health that things like genetically modified organisms may produce later on. And we have individuals who have the financial wherewithal, like Bill Gates, you know, funding this type of stuff, saying, no, we need to feed the world. And so the world is going to have to learn how to eat cardboard and survive on it. And because that's where that is what's sustainable, given the size of our population. And then this becomes the pushback. I mean, I remember reading, I did a show on paleo something one time, and then I went to a website and I had some woman said, you know, this is nonsense and never mind that, it's not sustainable. Here's a study produced by the American government. And I wish I would have saved this study, but the study showed that we cannot raise the amount of animal protein, but we can clearly raise the soy and corn. And so what about the fact that it's not sustainable? We can't really, not everyone can eat this way. Is that true, or is that just true given what we have in place today and that we would have to change to a decentralized food source approach in order for everyone to eat this way?
Yeah, well, I think there are sustainable issues, sustainability issues, but I think they're overblown quite a bit. You know, right now there's 7 billion people in the world, and there's maybe a few million eating paleo. And, you know, maybe we'll run into issues when 3 billion or 4 billion are trying to eat, you know, a paleo style. You know, so we have a long way to go. You know, it's quite possible that what we'll end up with is, you know, a paleo style food production system with naturally raised animals, that produces fairly expensive food, but extremely healthy food. And then, you know, sort of a low grade industrial agriculture system, you know, that produces cheaper, but less healthier food. And as long as everybody knows what they're getting, you know, they can, make their own choice, you know, based on their personal situation. You know, I have a little bit of historical perspective because I've studied medieval history, and throughout the Middle Ages, people spent 50 to 70% of their income on food. They spent less than 10% of their income on housing, you know, less than 10% on education. So if you look at what Americans spend their money on today, it's closer, if you look at disposable income after taxes, it's closer to 50% on housing.
Right.
And 10 to 15% on food, and then 15% on healthcare, which was never a big expense.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, we're spending less on food now, but we're spending a lot more on healthcare, and we're spending a lot more on college education, and we're spending a lot more on housing. And it's not really necessary to spend so much. You know, people spend so much on housing, you know, it's sort of a supply and demand issue. The supply of housing is restricted, and people bid up, you know, there's easy credit for mortgages, and people bid up the price of housing because they have the money to spend on it.
But don't you think part of the reason, do you think that part of the reason that people, I mean, just this morning, I was doing my cardio this morning at 6 a.m., watching the news, and a reporter who I want to email later today, named Lori Lyle, did a story about shopping economically and showed how this bag of groceries was $167, but this bag of groceries was $87 because, and they focused on, first of all, they focused on cost, right? And second of all, everything in the bag was processed. There was no steaks. There was no quartered chickens. There was no vegetables. None of that stuff. None of those commodity items. It was all
hot pockets and stuff like that, and cream cheese, and, you know, and there's this emphasis in the country that I believe is precluded by a notion that, you know, what you eat really doesn't matter. It doesn't impact. At the end of the day, really doesn't impact your health. So if you can get this particular product cheaper, even though that means it's got a lot more artificial ingredients in it, this is the way to go. And then isn't that message supported by our government?
Yeah, and that's a big mistake, of course. And, you know, one thing I'd add is that, you know, speaking for us personally, our food budget went down when we went paleo, and the reason was that we stopped eating out at restaurants and started cooking
at home. Which also means anybody who's out there listening, we need a good paleo chain of restaurants. So there you go. Okay.
Yep, that's right. So, you know, but it is possible to eat well and, you know, not spend huge amounts of money on, you know, some very basic paleo foods like eggs, milk, you know, if you eat dairy, potatoes, rice. You know, things like that are very inexpensive. So, you know, so even if a sustainable agriculture system, you know, doubled the cost of food relative to what it could be with an unsustainable one, you know, in fact, people are actually spending much more than they need to on food, on malnourishing industrially processed foods, on food prepared at restaurants. And then ancillary things like healthcare that they wouldn't need if they ate a better diet. So I'm not too worried about the sustainability issue. You know, you can argue about how much land or water, good agriculture might consume, and, you know, at some point that might drive up prices more than twofold or threefold, but I think, you know, for people right now, sustainability is not an issue. You can live very well on very good quality food, including grass-fed, naturally raised animals.
You know, it's funny. Dr. Andrew listens to the show from Munster, Germany, and he's listening live. And as we were talking about that study, he just put up on my Facebook, the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, sustainability of meat-based and plant-based diets and the environment. It's up there on my Facebook already. He's the best. Dr. Andrew, I don't know how he does it. He writes some of the best blog posts too, science-related blog posts. This guy's got to have like 10 computers all with the abstracts and studies. And I mean, he just put it right up there. All right, look, let's take our last commercial break and we'll wrap it up. We're talking with Paul Jaminet. His book, I am pronouncing your name right, Jaminet? Right?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't want to. His book is called The Perfect Health Diet. By the way, you can thank Dr. Andrew because he referred me to you and said I should have you on the show. So there you go.
Yeah, I do thank Adele, and like you said, he's amazingly prolific.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, I think he and I share a birthday. I don't know if his is the 10th and mine is the 11th, but anyway, we have birthdays coming up this June, Adele. Anyway, The Perfect Health Diet can be found at perfecthealthdiet.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Supreme Radio.
May not recognize Muscle Gauge Nutrition, but that's because they've been in the background as a private label manufacturer for some of your favorite brands. Now get ready to hear their name a lot as an introductory offer. Get 5 pounds of pure whey protein isolate for as little as $11 a pound and get free shipping too. Each 30 gram scoop contains the requisite amount of leucine to stimulate the anabolic response. Check out these flavors: cake batter, chocolate, cinnamon bun, ice cream sandwich, rocky road, strawberry, vanilla, and unflavored. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad and use the coupon code SUPER. That's SUPER. Today.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finest supplements are sold. For more information, and check out GetDS.com.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at primordialperformance.com.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high protein, low carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars. If you're like me, you avoid the insulin spike from eating pasta, but not anymore. Miracle Noodle is the world's first no-calorie, no-carbohydrate noodle. You heard me right. Now you can enjoy pasta dishes and stay on your low-carb diet. They have fettuccine, linguine, rigatoni, and more. Even angel hair pasta is now a no-calorie, no-carb food. And Miracle Noodle tastes great. So go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Miracle Noodle banner ad to learn more about how you can start enjoying pasta again, even when you're dieting. Find your Miracle Noodle at superhumanradio.com today.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Oops. I did it again, baby.
Yeah. The ladies are going to love you.
I like that bumper song. Welcome back. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Paul Jaminet. And we're talking really about the feasibility of the mainstream adopting ancestral diets, Paleolithic diets, and actually broadening them. As you pointed out at the beginning of our interview, not making them so restrictive, which leads me to this question. Is there a place for engineered foods in the paleo lifestyle? For instance, I probably eat anywhere from a low of 2 to a high of 12 Quest protein bars a day, depending on my accessibility to food, because they really are, you know, just almond base with whey isolate and, you know, very, very little adulteration, in my humble opinion. Is there room for engineered foods in the paleo lifestyle, or is it absolutely not? Shop the perimeters. You know, once you start going down the aisles, you're going over to the dark side.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's room for well-designed foods like that. I mean, I personally like cooking at home and shopping the perimeter, so I hardly ever eat even paleo style engineered foods, but they definitely have a place when you're going traveling or you're going hiking. You have to carry your food. You know, there's various situations when it's nice to have something like that. And I guess my big problem with industrially processed food is when you look at how they're engineering it, it's not with an eye toward making healthy food and making nourishing and toxin-free food. Often the engineering that they're doing is aimed at increasing the toxicity of the food. You know, so when they make genetic modifications of grains or so on, they're adding in new pesticides that weren't in there to try to increase crop yields for the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that is absolutely increasing the toxin load that people are getting. And, you know, similarly with a lot of other, you know, industrial processing, they put a lot more effort into thinking about how to reduce the cost of food preparation, you know, how to get more food-like stuff out of toxic raw materials. You know, like the earliest example was Wesson oil. This chemist, Wesson, figured out how to get oil out of cotton seeds. So in the 19th century, you know, they grew tremendous amounts of cotton. They separated out the cotton fibers from the seeds and used the fibers to make plants, but they had all these leftover seeds. And he figured out how to sort of detoxify it enough that people could eat the cotton oil. And, you know, and that's sort of been, for the last 100 years, kind of the focus of a lot of food science, food chemistry, is, you know, how can you take toxic waste products and turn them into foodstuffs?
I know, it's amazing. I've said on this show numerous times, I think the last time I said it was when I had the woman who wrote the Politics of Pet Food. I can't think of her name right now. She's pretty popular in the mainstream as well. You know, and she was painting this picture that, by and large, the food industry is benevolent because they're always trying to find, you know, better ways to exploit something. So they use every part of a carcass, for instance. And then I said, I see it exactly the opposite. I said, if they could figure out how to get us to eat poop, they would, because it's so much, it would be so much more profitable. And it really has nothing to do with, you know, being thrifty. That's what she was trying to paint the picture that, you know, they're being thrifty. It has nothing to do with being thrifty. If you can find something that people will readily throw away and then make it something that people will readily purchase, then you have the ideal product because your cost is close to zero. So that means it's pure profit. So what the food manufacturers try to do constantly, and I believe soy is one of these things. You know, everybody out there in the mainstream extols the benefits of soy, and I keep saying, look, the reason soy is high in estrogen isn't because nature wanted us to make milk out of it for pre- and postmenopausal women. It's because that was the defense mechanism of soy to protect its genetic material. You know, when animals would eat it, they would mate less frequently, they would have fewer offspring, and they would wipe themselves out, and the soy would get rid of its natural enemy. But the mainstream goes, no, these phytoestrogens are good for you. They could protect against prostate cancer and all these other, you know, no. It's not that way at all. So anytime they come out with a new food, I'm very, you know, suspicious of it. And yeah. You know, they come to market with it in a big way about all of its health benefits.
Yeah. Well, I think what we really need are more informed consumers and, you know, people going out and choosing to buy healthy foods. And that will start putting pressure on them, you know, to do better things. You know, I don't think it's wrong to, you know, look for how to make something valuable out of something that's being neglected. You know, we buy from meats from local farmers. And if you look at their price lists, you know, for these grass-fed cow meats, you know, the popular cuts of steak are like $25 a pound.
Right.
But bones are $3 a pound, you know, heart, kidney, liver, you know, $3 a pound.
I like that stuff.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, we buy a lot of those organ meats.
And I was just going to say, what people don't realize is, you know, this country is very squeamish. We're squeamish about things that we shouldn't be squeamish about, like pre-mastication for babies or even breastfeeding in restaurants. And you know what? Organ meat is where all the magic is. The viscera is where all the magic is. That's what people throw away. They don't want to eat the chicken gizzards. They don't want to eat the chicken heart. They don't want to eat. It's like, that's where the magic is. That liver, that's where the magic is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think it would actually be a great service if we could get people to, you know, figure out how to turn these waste products into popular foods. You know, if you're talking about real food like liver, kidneys, heart, so I'm not going to blame, you know, the food industry for trying to figure out how to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, but it's just, you know, the way they've gone about it has been, you know, to introduce a lot more toxins into our diet. So it's been disastrous so far. But I'm hopeful that they can turn that ingenuity into more productive directions.
And they will. If people would vote with their dollars, what will happen is they will change. And this is what people, they will sell you whatever they can. And when you stop buying it, they will sell you whatever you want. And that's the way it has always been in industry. End of story. So when people stop buying genetically modified corns and the growers can't get the dollars for their crops and Monsanto can't sell the seeds anymore, and Monsanto says, hey, find out why this is happening. And they go, oh, people won't eat GMO anymore. Then Monsanto's not going to go, well, we're just going to invest more money in GMO. They're going to say, I guess we need to sell off that company. What will people eat?
Yeah.
But we have to vote with our dollars.
Right. So that's why we have to bring paleo into the mainstream, is get a lot more allies in this, trying to get the food producers and restaurants and so on to give us better food choices.
Paul, do you consult for people if they want help with their diet and stuff on your website?
No, I don't consult personally or for money. But I do have a question and answer page, and I do try to answer questions, schedule permitting. So, I do welcome people leaving questions there.
And people can get your book at Amazon.com or wherever final books are sold also, but they can get it at your website, which is perfecthealthdiet.com, right?
We don't sell it at the website, but we do have a collection of reviews and links to places you can buy it.
There you go. Paul, thank you so much for being on Superhuman Radio.
Oh, thank you, Carl. It was great to talk to you.
Pleasure. Okay, so there you have it. Another show completed. Tomorrow is Thursday, which means that we have a installment of the roundtable discussion on strength and hypertrophy with Coach Wade Johnson and Rob Regish. Don't miss that. And then, of course, Friday, my favorite day in the studio, because I get to spend it with the lovely and talented Elisa Profumo. Thanks for listening to Superhuman Radio. See you tomorrow.